So we're holding on page Bays in Sota or Isdalen. We learned yesterday a couple of statements of Rav Chista about things that might happen in the household that destroy it. Begashmius, we said Znus and anger, both of them referring to the woman. So now the Gemara continues in that vein. V'omer Rav Chista, b'tchila kodim shechotu Yisrael, originally before the Jewish people sinned, ho'is a shechina shruya in kol achad v'achad. The shechina would rest together with every person in every person's household. Shenemar, as we find in the pasuk, Hashem lekecha mishalech bekerav machanecha. Hashem is walking in the midst of your camp. So wherever there's a camp of Yidden, meaning wherever there's a house of a husband and wife, then the Shechina is there. As we have later on in the Masechta, we have in the second parak, there's the famous expression that the Gemara has about that the man has the yud in his name, Ish, and the woman has the hey, Isha, and when then Shechina, and when Ish v'Isha Zachu, Shechina, Shruya b'Nein, because then they have the name Yud Kei. So before Kodim Shachatu Yisrael, before they sinned, and Marsha says this goes together with the previous piece, meaning primarily before they were Mizame, then the Shechina was with every yin. The Kivin Shachatu, but then when they sinned, Hoisa Shechina Mistalekas and Nistaka Shechina Mehem, the Shechina left them. And it may mean, in other words, we don't just mean, on an individual level, that any individual house with his nus, then the Shechina leaves, we may mean more collectively, once it became, so Rashi explains it means on an individual level. The Shechina won't come to their house because it can't tolerate seeing the Averis in the house. But it may also mean more collectively that once that became even a little bit prevalent among the Jewish people, then the Shechina left people's houses in general. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, right after that, V'lo yira v'cha ervas dover, Hashem should not see in you a matter of erva, v'shav me'acharecha, and he would turn away from being behind you. So here we have, before we said that znus and anger break down the house, Marsha points out that now we have, Rashi had explained that it's on a practical level because she's involved with her znus or whatever, and therefore she doesn't take care of the house and is master everything. But now, based on this, it comes out that actually the house is destroyed just by virtue of the fact that the Shechina leaves it. Another way of looking at it is it's both. It gets destroyed by Gashmius with those other two, and it gets destroyed by Ruchnius with this one. And then vice versa. When they're Zorcha, then the Shechina is with them in their household. The Shechanti b'Zorcham, b'Zorch kolachad b'achad. Further on this topic about the difference between before and after people did Averis, or about mitzvahs and Averis in general, Omrav Shmoma Nachmeni, Omrav Yonason, Kola Oisa Mitzvah Achas Ba'ulamazer, a person who does even one mitzvah in this world, Makadamto Yomelichatu, over Hilachas the fun of La'ulam Abba, then it walks ahead of him, that mitzvah walks and Rashi says announces in front of him to go to Olam Abba, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, V'holach Lafanecha Tzidkecha, Yitzedek, your righteousness, will walk in front of you, Kavod Hashem Yasecha, the glory of Hashem will gather you in. So the person is going to be gathered in to Gan Eden together with the glory of Hashem, with the neshamas of the other tzaddikim, and the mitzvah therefore is going to clear the way and announce that he's coming. We have the famous thing, Marsha points out that we know that whenever a person does a mitzvah or vice versa, an aveda, it creates an appropriate malach. We have even in Pirkei Avos, so we have ha'isa mitzvah achas koneloi praklit echad, and over aveda achas koneloi kateger echad. So those are the malachim that we're talking about that will walk before him. A person does even one aveda in this world, then that aveda malacha fatar, it wraps him up. Wraps around him, and it takes him and it walks in front of him to the day of judgment. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yulofsu Ochas Davkam. The ways of their paths are wrapped up. Some Yulofsu from the same shortage as Mofazu. Yalu Batoyhu, they end up in Toyhu, they end up in nothingness, via Vedu, and they get lost. So we see that the Toyhu refers to Gehenim, and therefore it means that the Avera wraps the person up and takes him. Marsha points out with the mitzvah, he's going to Gan Eden, therefore he doesn't need to be wrapped up. He'll go gladly following the mitzvah to go to Gan Eden. When it comes to the other, then he has to be wrapped up and like forced to go there because he won't go there willingly. Eitz Yosef refers in this connection to the expression that you have in by the brachas and then the klolas in Parshas Kisavah. By the brachas you have uvoh alecha kol brachas ha'elav v'isigucha. The brachas will catch up to you, whereas by the klolas it says rafucha v'isigucha. They'll chase after you and catch up to you, because when it comes to the brachas, the person doesn't run away from him. They don't have to chase after him, whereas by the klolas they do. So the same principle is over here, where the mitzvah doesn't have to wrap him up and take him, but the aveda does. The Rambam Mefarshim will explain that particularly we find that often in Shas, Avera, unspecified, means Nus, and similarly Mitzvah sometimes, more often in Yerushalmi, but occasionally in the Bavli as well, that Mitzvah, unspecified, means Tzedakah, so therefore we'll be talking about particularly that respective Mitzvah and Avera. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Loza, I'm a kshura boy kekelev. Rabbi Loza says, not only that, the Avera ends up tied to him like a dog. Now, namely, in other words, you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it was a week and a half or 2 weeks ago or so in Daf HaYomi, you have the Gemara mentioned over there that there was during the Teva, nobody was allowed to have relations, but there were three creatures that violated that, one of them being the dog, and the Gemara says the result is Kelev Nikshar. When a male and female dog mate, afterwards there's something that causes that they can't separate right away, so the result is they're unable to mate in private like many other animals do. It becomes more publicized. So here in the same way, the Avera, particularly of Znus, ends up getting tied to him like the way a dog is tied to its mate for a while, and therefore, like, it looks ridiculous, and it becomes publicized that it made him. Shenema, as we find by Yosef with Potiphar's wife, v'leshama eleha, he didn't want to listen to her, lishkav etzla, to lie with her, liyos ima, to be with her. Now, why those extra words, liyos ima, means lishkav etzla ba'olamazeh. He didn't want to lie with her in this world, because then, if he did, he would be liyos ima, liyom adinu ba'olam haba. Then he would be with her in the next world as well, like the way that the dog is tied to its mate. So therefore, he didn't want that as well. He didn't want her to be tied to him like that. And therefore, he held her off and didn't want anything to do with her. So therefore, Rabbi Loza says the same thing. When a person does it, then it ends up getting tied to him, unless, of course, he does Truva, and then that's a whole other matter. Okay. Further on, the Gemara gets into a long sugya on the question. Now, here we're talking about, again, the subject of the Mishnah and the beginning of the Masechta is that the wife was in Stira. She was secluded with somebody else after her husband gave her kinui, after he warned her, don't be alone with this man. Now, there has to be a certain minimum amount of time that they're alone together where potentially there could have been bia. So therefore, the Gemara gets into a long sugya with about six or seven different opinions of how long, what is the minimum time that would be needed for bia. This is, by the way, Negei Lahalocha, for example, as far as the dinim of Yichud. Posts can talk about, for example, that there might be an issue, there might be an issue with a man and woman being in an elevator alone, if it's more than the amount of time that, according to the various opinions in the Gemara. Anyway, the Gemara goes through six or seven different opinions about how long is the minimum time for Bia. And then in the course of that, the Gemara quotes a pasuk, the one opinion, Rabbi Eliezer, is that it's the amount of time that it would take to reach into a basket and pull out a loaf of bread. And he quotes in that connection a pasuk that refers in Mishle that refers to an isha zona and a loaf of bread. Ki ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lochem. So now, the Gemara, after going through that whole sugya, then the Gemara goes with another Durasha about those words. So the Gemara says, Durasha Rav Avira. Rav Avira gave the following Durasha. Zimnin amala mishmei derab Ami, v'zimnin amala mishmei derab Asi. Sometimes he would tell over the statement in the name of Rav Ami, and sometimes in the name of Rav Asi. Now, why would he do that? So, Bapashtus, he learned by both of them, and the idea would be, some Mephoshim say, very simple, in places where there were Talmidim of Rav Ami, he would say it over in Rav Ami's name. In places where there were more Talmidim of Rav Asi, he would say it over in Rav Asi's name. Because either way, he wanted that the people there should pay attention, and when you know that something comes from your own, when you hear that something comes from your own Rebbe, you're going to pay much more attention to him. Ben Yehoyada points out, there's a number of places in Shas where you have this expression. One of them is in Cholin. Ben Yehoyada over there gives a bit of a different explanation. Rav Ami was greater than Rav Asi. We always find in Shas that Rav Ami is mentioned before Rav Asi. So usually the right thing to do would be to quote it in Rav Ami's name. But he doesn't always want to do that, because that would be putting down Rav Asi, and therefore sometimes instead he would quote it in the name of Rav Asi, so as not to slight him as well. Rabbi Leivik, the Rebbe's father, today being his birthday, so I was not going to talk about him. He has an explanation in one place. He says that Rabbi Avira, he explains how in detail how Rabbi Avira represents Gvura, and Gvura derives from Bina, and he explains how Mem and Samach represent two different aspects of Bina, and therefore you have Rabbi Ami with a Mem and Rabbi Asi with a Samach. So therefore you can say it sometimes in the name of one and sometimes in the name of the other, representing the two aspects of Bina from which his Gvura comes. Anyway, so he says as follows. So, Kola Oichel Lechem Lim Tilas Yadayim, if a person eats bread without washing his hands, Kila Baal Isha Zoyna, as if he had relations with an Isha Zoyna. What's the connection? So a couple of explanations, one of them being it shows that he doesn't have any respect for boundaries, therefore he eats without washing, and therefore he has no respect for boundaries when it comes to an Isha Zoyna as well. A related point is that then it means he's eating just to fulfill his taivas and not in order to be kaddish. One reason for Netilas Yadayim is, as the pasuk says, v'iskadishtim v'isim kedoshim, you should make yourself holy. So he eats without washing his hands, shows that he doesn't care about the kedusha that he's supposed to accomplish with eating food. In the same way, then, and that would be the same thing as far as having relations where he doesn't care about the kedusha that should be in it, and instead he just goes with an isha zayna. Anyway, Shenemar, so Rabbi Avira says, because we see that the pasuk compares them, ki ba'ad isha zoyna ad kikar lochem, because for an isha zoyna, for a loaf of bread. So in other words, Rashi explains, he doubtions it as follows, because of a loaf of bread, because of an Avera involving a loaf of bread, namely eating it without washing, he comes to the same punishment as he would get for having relations with a zoyna. The pasuk continues. The Gemara is going to douch in afterwards the second half of the pasuk. But the Eisha Sish, a married woman, Nefesh Yikara Satsud, will trap a precious soul. Later on, the Gemara will explain what that part of the pasuk means. But right now, we're focusing on the first half of the pasuk. Kiba Ad Isha Zoyna Ad Kikar Lochem. So again, Rabbi Avira says that we understand the pasuk to be saying that Ad Kikar Lochem is the same as the Ad Isha Zoyna. But Omar Rava, says you can't really learn the pasuk that way. Hi ba'ad isha zona ad kikalochem. Fine, I agree that you can read the pasuk as giving the effect and then the cause. So saying that the effect is the punishment for an isha zona and the cause is that he ate the kikalochem without washing. But the problem with it is that then the ba'ad and the ad are out of place respectively. It should say ba'ad kikalochem for the sake of a loaf of bread, ad isha zona, therefore he ends up with a punishment up to and including the punishment for having relations with an isha zona. If it said ad isha zona ba'ad kikar lochem, then it would work. Or if it said ad in both, if it said or the other way around, then if it said ad by both of them, ad kikar lochem, because of a loaf of bread, there's such great punishment, ad up to the punishment of an isha zoyna. So Rava agrees. In other words, Rashi says that you could read the pasuk in the direction that Rabbi Avira is reading it, but the words ad and ba'ad seem out of place on that reading of it. So either the pasuk should be flipped around, or at least it should have the ba'ad together with the kikar lochem and the ad together with the isha zoyna. Eitz Yosef explains that actually Rabbi Avira actually meant something along those lines, but Rava didn't understand him properly. What Rabbi Avira meant, when a person eats without the Tilas Yadayim, he ends up becoming poor, and having relations with a zoyna also causes a man to become poor. So therefore, Rabbi Avira says, then it means that when he eats without the Tilas Yadayim, he gets the same punishment as for an isha zoyna. Ki ba'ad isha zoyna ad kikar lochem. So in other words, it is the same as Rava is saying, but Robert didn't understand him and thought that it meant that a person is just ki'ilu ba'al isha zoyna, and therefore he asks on him from the Lashon HaPasuk. Okay. So Ella Amar Rava. So rather Rava says, no, what you can learn from the Pasuk is as follows. The other way around. Kol ba'al isha zoyna, a man has relations with an isha zoyna, l'soif mevakash kikar lachan ve'ene motze. There's going to come a point where eventually he's going to be looking for a loaf of bread and he won't even find one. Now, Marsha points out, Rabbi Avira and Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi will all agree with that point as well. In fact, they have a pasuk in another pasuk in Mishlei that says, "V'roya zonus ya'abed hoin," a person who gets involved with zonus will lose a fortune. But all he's saying is, Rabbi Avira compared it to eating without Netilas Yadayim, and the simon for what he says is the word Oni itself stands for Anius Netilas Yadayim. So there's poverty for failing to do Netilas Yadayim. But Rava says, never mind the Netilas Yadayim, we're saying that it just means that a man who has relations with a Zoyna is going to wind up having a lack of bread and is going to wind up having those Yisurim. Ion Yaakov points out, you know, when you get down to it in a way that poverty is the worst of all Yisurim, so therefore it means he's going to go even that far and actually suffer from that. So, continuing on this topic of Netilas Yadayim, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Zrika, Amar Rav Elazar, call him a Zalzal on Netilas Yadayim. If a person is careless with Netilas Yadayim, and he eats regularly, Rashi explains, without Netilas Yadayim, Nekar Min HaOlam, he gets uprooted from the world. So Rashi explains, uprooted from the world means Chayiv Misa. And we find a posik of Poretz Goder, a person who breaks through a fence, meaning who disobeys what the Chachamim say, Yishchenu Nachash, then a snake will bite him, and that refers to, in other words, that so the fences refer to the Takonis and Gzeris that the Chachamim made. Here, in today's three Parakim of Rambam, we have an example of one of those, the concept of Eruvin, that was a Takonah of Shlomo HaMelech, but here we're talking about Netilas Yadayim, which is another Takonah of his originally. Anyway, the point is that if a person breaks through such a fence, then he deserves to be bitten by a snake. So therefore, so is a Nekar Min HaOlam. Tosfos actually gets into a long, long discussion about this point. It's not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos points out, first of all, then that would apply to any Din D'Rabbanan. Why is Reb Zrika saying that specifically about Netilas Yadayim? And second of all, there are other Gemaras that imply that a person, that we just said now, that a person eats without Netilas Yadayim, he becomes poor, and there's other relevant Gemaras on the subject. So Tosfos discusses at some length that maybe Nekar Min HaOlam does not mean that he dies, like Rashi says, but rather it means that he becomes poor. So therefore, the idea would be, because he's mezalzel, he's being careless with it, we're talking about, in other words, it's not just that one time he didn't eat without Netilas Yadayim, that would make him poor. But now when he's regularly mezalzel, he's regularly careless with it, and then fails, and then doesn't bother washing his hands for bread, so then Nekar Min HaOlam, then you have Nekar Min HaOlam, that he gets uprooted from the world, meaning that he becomes poor. So in other words, for a one-time thing, you might say he's chayiv misa, but when he does it again and again, then he's worse off, he becomes poor, and then after that, other things happen to him as well. Then there are Mephoshim who learn that actually what we mean by mezalzel and Netilas Yadayim means he does wash, but he washes carelessly. He doesn't make sure to use the necessary amount of water. He doesn't make sure that his hands are covered properly. So then we're saying over here, Nekar Min HaOlam, as opposed to those other Gemaras are talking about where he doesn't wash at all. Anaf Yosef brings another point over here from the El Yeraba on the Halachas and the Netilas Yadayim, who points out there's another thing as well, that you get down to it, the whole concept of the Netilas Yadayim, the whole concept of washing for bread for Cholin is not really a thing of its own. It's only the Gemara in Cholin brings two reasons for it. The primary reason is the Gemara says they're from Srach Truma. Because since Koyanim have to eat Truma with their hands Tahor, and Midraban, and a person's hands are Tameh, and therefore they have to wash their hands, the Chum made also the concept of Netilas Yadayim for all other Jews, even non-Koyanim, and even for, and even when they're not eating Truma, in order that this way Koyanim will be careful. So therefore, so most Gzeiras and Takonas D'Rabbanan, if the object is the Takona itself. But here you have, it's only because of something else, so you might have thought that it's not so important, therefore, nevertheless, we're saying that Nekar Min HaOlam and Chayiv Misa. And then Anaf Yosef goes on to say, as far as that Gemara in Shabbos, that implies that if it's just that he washes carelessly, so fine, it can start with Anius, because Hashem never starts by taking life. Hashem always starts by harming a person's, by taking away a person's possessions first, and then it can escalate all the way to that. More on the topic of Netilas Yadayim, the Gemara says, Omer Abchia Ba'ashi Omer Rav, Maim Rishonim, when you wash the first water, meaning Netilas Yadayim, before eating bread, Sarach Shiyagbiya Yad V'mayra, you have to lift your hands upward, you have to lift up the tips of your fingertips, because, as we're going to say in a second, the idea is you don't want the water to run from beyond the washing area back onto the area that you're supposed to wash. My machronim, on the other hand, when it comes to washing my machronim, so shiyashpil yodav lamata, then you have to lower your fingers downward. With the idea being, the point of my machronim is to get off any of the melach zoymis that was on your fingers, any zuama, any grease and dirt and whatever from the food, so you want your fingers to be pointing downward, so that all of that stuff will actually drip off together with the my machronim. Tani nami hachi, we learn similarly in a braisa. Hanoto yada, when a person washes his hands for bread, tzorach shiag via yada lamaila. He has to lift his hands upward, and the reason is shema yetsu mayim chutz laperek, because otherwise water might go beyond the perek. Now, there's an enormous machlokas we've shown him. What perek are we talking about? Rashi here and in some other places, it explains that the perek means only the tips of the fingers. So that's on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. We follow that and we wash only our fingertips because according to Rashi, the chlal, when you're talking about Mitzvos Yadayim, that's all you need to wash.
It means to
what? Means until the first joint.
So we do only on Tisha B'Av until that, so we go to where?
So, yeah, I think you're right, actually. Yeah, we mean until the knuckle, until the second joint. Yeah, you're right, sorry. Then you have Rishonim who learn that it means the entire finger, and then you have still other Rishonim who learn that it means the entire hand. So normally when we wash Negel Vaster during throughout the year, and until it's a dying for bread, and so forth, then we wash the entire hand up to the wrist. In any case, it actually brings from the Mishnah in Masechta Yadayim that explains like this. When you wash, if you wash one time on each hand, the problem is the water was tahor, but the problem is now your hands are tamei and they're matame the water. So therefore, you wash again in order to replace that tamei water with tahor water. Now the thing is though that it's only matame ada perek up until the joint, whichever joint, whether we mean the knuckle or whether we mean the ends of the fingers or whether we mean the wrist, it's only matame and matahar up to there. So therefore, if you have your hands pointed downward, what may happen is you wash and some of the water goes past there, past that area, and then it drips back down onto your hand, and therefore it's going to be matame it again. So that
where would it come from?
So in other words, let's say, for example, according to the Rishonim, who learn that you have to wash all the way to the wrist. The problem is some of the water may go past the wrist. Now, if your hand is pointing downward, then some of that water is going to drip from beyond your wrist, from your arm, onto the back of your hand.
What's wrong with this water? This water is not tonic.
But that water is connected, but basically what happens is that the first water went beyond the perek, and then the second one, you didn't go as far as the first one, so now what happens is even though it's only hands that are tummy midrabanan, nevertheless, that original water, maybe because it's all connected, yeah, then therefore it, whatever the case, the point is that it's going to end up dripping onto the hand, and therefore it's going to be metameh again. By the way, so nowadays we don't always do that. We don't always make sure that our hands are lifted upward when we wash. One point is actually you have in Hayom Yom, it mentions the Hanhaga of the Rebbe Rashab based on Hagois Oshri in Chulin, who brings from the Riva, that instead what you should do is wash three times, and that takes care of those kinds of problems. One idea is some Rishonim say that the third time helps in case your hands were dirty beforehand, and the first one removes the dirt, and then the second and third one correspond to the first and second one that we're talking about over here. But a different point is also, even if your hands are clean, it's also, it helps to avoid this problem of water dripping from beyond the wrist onto the hand, because now that you already have three washings, then that takes care of all of that problem, which is why our minhag is to wash three times when it comes to washing for hamotzi.
So they
haven't
did four times.
They haven't did four times, I don't know. I haven't heard of that. Could be. In any case, I mean, there's also posts can point out that all of this issue may only be if you wash with exactly a revius, or even less than a revius, whereas if you wash with more than a revius, it may not be an issue in the first place, so there's that factor as well to consider. With all of that, Ion Yaakov also points out another reason might be to lift up your hands when you're washing, might be to represent that you're showing that you want to be Makadosh yourself a little, and you want Hashem to be Makadosh you a lot, and therefore lifting up your hands like in a gesture of tefillah. As opposed to Mayim Achronim, Fakerik, make sure after you've eaten and you're satisfied, lower your hands down to represent that you're not proud and you're not a Balgaiva, there's no Vromlo Vavecha Vashachachta. Anyway, that's the idea why you'd have to lift up and down your hands respectively, by Mayim Rishonim, again, in order to avoid this issue with water dripping beyond the wrist and then coming back down onto your hand, and with Mayim Achronim so that all the grease and Melach Sodomis and whatnot gets off your fingers. Okay. The Gemara continues, another din about Netilas Yadayim. Om Rav Abahu, kolo uchu pasbala nigov yadayim. If a person then, after having washed hamotzi, if he then eats bread without drying his hands, kilo uchu lechem tomei. That's as if he's eating bread that is tomei. So, because it makes the bread music, it makes the bread disgusting, and it's considered like tumah. Shenemar, as we find in the pasuk in Yechezkel, we have a Hashem tells Yechezkel at various times during his career to act out various things of what's going to happen with the impending churban and golus. People should watch what he's doing and take a lesson from it and do tshuva. So at one point, Hashem tells him a whole thing with lying on his side for X number of for 390 days on one side and 40 days on the other, etc. And then during that time, the whole thing, because that was the number of years respectively that Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda had worshipped Avodah Zarah and done other avodas, and then Hashem tells him during that time he's to eat a sort of coarse bread. You're going to the health food now stores now. You have Ezekiel bread. It's based on the recipe from that pasuk. Hashem tells him to take several different grains and mix them together and make a kind of bread out of it. And that's going to be his food during that time that he's lying on his sides and enacting the siege of Yerushalayim and all of that. So what? Almost matzah, not quite really. I mean, it includes, I don't know, not really. It's bread, but it's bread. It rises and everything. You certainly can't buy it during Pesach, besides half the ingredients of kidney, anyway, the point is that Hashem tells him that when it comes to baking this bread, he should make a fire. First, Hashem tells him you should make a fire out of human waste, out of human excrement, and use that to bake the bread on. And at that point, Yechezkel says, Hashem, like Bob Feeb Sarpigo, I never even ate anything where there was a shayla on the meat, and I never ate from an animal that they didn't take off the matnas kahuna beforehand, etc. So this is too much for me. So Hashem tells him, fine, you don't need to use human waste, you can use animal waste instead to bake the bread on. And then Hashem tells him the following pasuk: Kocha yochel bnei Yisrael eslach mam tomei. In this way, the Jewish people will eat their bread tomei bagoyim asher adichem shom, among the nations where I'm going to send them into galus among them. So we see, in other words, that anything disgusting can be called tumah. In other words, there's nothing in this whole recipe and all these instructions that Hashem is giving him that involves tumah per se. But you have disgustingness and filth, the using of human or animal waste. So we see that something disgusting can be called tumah, and therefore, in the same vein, then when the person is eating bread without drying his hands, then it can be considered tumah. Kilo oichel lechem tumah. That's according to Rashi. There was a couple of other explanations how we get lechem tomei, how we get that a person eats without the tillus adayim is like eating lechem tomei, how we get that from this pasuk. The tur at the beginning of Hilchos Netilus Yadayim brings two remazim for it. One of them is a gematria. The words lachmam tomei are the same gematria as beli niguv yadayim, without drying the hands. And another one is the word lachmam itself can be broken down into lachmayim, that your hands are wet with water. Marsha points out another thing also, the word adichem over here, the pashtus, it's from the Shodesh nidach, like la yudach and menu nidach. So it means that Hashem will push them away. But it can also be understood in the Lashon Hadocha, washing. So by going Marsha adichem sham, where they're going to wash their hands there and then fail to dry them, and they're going to be eating lechem tomei. So the Gemara says, before we worked on the first half of the pasuk, which was again, kiba ad isha zona ad kikal lochen, and we had Rav Avira's drasha that it meant that if a person eats without until it's a dying, it's like having, he's going to be punished like having relations with an isha zona. And then we had Rav's point, which is the other way around, a person that has relations with an isha zona is going to be looking for a loaf of bread and he won't be able to find. Now let's work on the second half of the pasuk. My ve'eshes ish nefesh yikara satsud. What about the second half of that pasuk? What do we learn from that? That says an eshes ish will trap a precious soul. So amar b'chiva abba, amar b'yechanan. It means kol adam sheyesh begasus haruach, a person who is a baal gaiva, who thinks of his soul as being very important. So in other words, nefesh yikara does not mean an actual precious soul, as in like a tzaddik or something. Rather, it means somebody who thinks of himself more highly than he really is. We find the word yikar is sometimes synonym with covered. So it means a person who thinks very highly of his own covered. So such a person, kolam sheyesh v'gas zaruach, losoif nishol ve'eshes ish, is going to end up stumbling and then getting involved with an eshes ish. Shenema, as that pasuk says, the eshes ish nefesh yikara satsud. So the eshes ish traps the precious soul, meaning it was the soul that thinks of himself as precious. So the whole pasuk goes together. Ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lochem, the eshes ish, and the eshes ish, who is a zona, in other words, the zona of the first half of the pasuk, is also referring to the eshes ish of the second half, where when an eshes ish becomes a zona, nefesh yikara satsud, then she ends up trapping the soul of the person who thinks of himself as precious. So Maharsha explains differently. The nefesh, the gas is the ruin. Let's finish the next piece, and then we'll explain what Maharsha says. Omar Rava. So Rava says, still, that doesn't really fit with the words of the pasuk. Hi nefesh yikara. Why are you using the expression nefesh yikara, which after all can suggest a precious soul? Fine, you're saying it means he thinks of himself as precious. But still, use a clearer expression. Nefesh gvoya mi boilei. Use the expression nefesh gvoya, a high soul. Meaning like you have the expression in Pirkei Avos that like it says by Bill on Samidim over there. So it's just a nefesh gvoya. And Maharsha explains that also in that case the original understanding was that we could also understand nefesh gvoya could mean a person who tries to look after his appearance a lot. We talked before about Yosef with Potiphar's wife. We find that he was in the south of the Sirais, curling his hair and paying attention to his appearance. And Hashem tells him the bear is going to come after you. And Batisa Ishas Adonav. So therefore, the nefesh yikara would be the same kind of thing over here. And then the oid, and then Rava says, first of all, to say nefesh gvoya, which fine would mean a proud person, or it would mean a person who prides himself on his looks. But second of all, also, va'oid he sots of me by the way. Also, it should use the word he somewhere there in the pasuk to make it clear that it means that she will trap him. Otherwise, it sounds the other way around. It sounds like the Eishes Ish traps the precious soul, but it's actually the other way around. The way the pasuk is phrased without the word he, then that's what it sounds like. But if you had the other way around, then it would make it more clear. It would mean that the precious soul, the one who's the Baal Gaiva, ends up trapping an Eishes Ish and having relations with her. So Maharsha also explains, in other words, following his logic, that it means when you find a person who's very concerned about his appearance, then sometimes you find that the Zonis go after him rather than the other way around. Potiphar's wife went after Yosef. We find an example in Bava Metzia where Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's son, went off Latarus Ra, and Zonis were looking to have relations with him. So therefore, it should make it to say like that. He sotsud to make it clear that it means that it means that the Isha Zona goes after him. So El Amar Rava, so no, Rava says, what it means is, Kol Abal Eishes Ish, a man has relations with an Eishes Ish, afilu lomad Torah, even if he learned Torah, dichtiv ba, and about the Torah, it says, yukore hi mipninim, the Torah is more precious than pninim, which means pearls, and not only that, you have a kriuk siv in the posik over there, the word pninim is written as in ksiv, it's written mipniyim, without the second nun. So we learn from that, yukore hi mekon gadol, shenichnas lefnai velefnim. We learn from that learning Torah is even more important than the Kohen Gadol who goes lefnai v'lefnim. They're redoubting from the word pninim. And in fact, you have the famous expression, mamzer tamid chacham, kodem l'Kohen Gadol am ha'aretz, which has implications in halacha, is based on this pasuk. So even a person learned the precious Torah, afilu hochi, nevertheless, hitzadatu l'dinish on Gehenim, nevertheless, being involved with an Eishes Ish, ends up trapping him and bringing him to Gehenim. So now it doesn't need to say he, because it actually means the Aveira itself traps him, like we said before, Malafafatu, that it actually drags him off, to Gehenim. Yun Yaakov points out later on in the Masechta, the Gemara mentions that first of all that learning Torah protects a person from Averis. So why doesn't it protect him from being involved with the Eishes Ish over here? So one possibility is that it means protect him from Yisurim in Olam Hazeh. It doesn't mean that it protects him from Jin. No, so it doesn't mean protect him from Averis. It means protect him from punishment. So it means it protects him from Yisurim in this world. It doesn't mean that he's in the hand of Gehenim in La'asid Lavoi. Furthermore, also, Yun Yaakov points out that Noyef Isha Chasar Lev, when he has being involved with an Isha Zayna, then it means he's lacking in understanding, so therefore he doesn't have the understanding of Torah, and therefore the Torah doesn't protect him. Also, Yun Yaakov refers to also a point that's mentioned later in the Masechta, Ein Aveda Mechaba Torah. A person does Avedas, it still doesn't extinguish the source of the Torah he did. Fine, it doesn't extinguish the source of his Torah, but nevertheless, he still needs to be cleaned up in Gehenim. Tosfos in this connection brings up the point that the Gemara elsewhere seems to say that a man has relations with an Eishes Ish, he never gets out of Gehenim, as opposed to here we're saying that he goes to Gehenim, but implying that he can come out of it, and there are other Gemaras relevant to that. So Tosfos draws a distinction for one thing, whether he did Tshuva or not. It can happen. Usually we say that sometimes we can say that a Baal Eishes Ish and didn't do Tshuva, then he may go to Gehenim and then stay there for much longer than usual, as opposed to if he did Tshuva, then he may only have to spend a much shorter amount of time there. since we're talking about gasus haruach, so now the Gemara goes into a further discussion about this point of gasus haruach, pride, of gaiva. A person who has this trait of gasus haruach, of gaiva, ka'ovid avodas kochavim, then it's as if he worships avodah zarah. So Maharsha points out like this. We learned about the Ruach Tara and the Ruach Tumah. The Gemara discussed the question, when a man is mekaneh to his wife, is it because he has a Ruach Tara that causes him to be unable to tolerate his nus, or is it the other way around, a Ruach Tumah that's causing friction between him and his wife? So every person has a Ruach Tara and a Ruach Tumah. So the Ruach Tumah includes the power of Avodah Zarah. So the gas ruach is like that as well. That ruach ha-tumah causes them to forget Hashem, where Hashem is the source of Tara, and therefore that's why we can say that he's like Ovid Avodah Zarah. There's a few other ideas given about it. Another idea is that when he's about gaiva, means he may be learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, but he's doing it in order to pride himself on it, so that people will admire him and whatever. So therefore, it comes out basically it's almost like he's worshiping shtei reshuyos. He's worshiping Hashem, and lahavdil, he's also worshiping public opinion. So therefore, he can be considered like an ovid avodah zarah. By the way, you do have in that connection, on the other hand, you have, for example, the Rashba points out mitzvah lefarsim oisim mitzvah, that when a person does a mitzvah, sometimes it is appropriate to publicize it so that other people will learn from him. The Rashba was dealing with a question of a person had donated a new wing to a shul, and he wanted his name on a plaque over there, and can you do it? And the Rashba says yes, because that'll encourage other people to donate to the shul in a similar way. So you do have that concept, but on the other hand, we're saying a person has to be careful of the gaiva that's involved in that. Gas is a ruach, yes. So that's the Marsha I was mentioning about the ruach, about the two different kinds of ruachas that a person has. So why do we see why? In what way is it? Why? How do we see that it's like avodah zarah? Ksiv hachatoyav as Hashem kol gvalev. We have a pasuk that says that any person who has a high heart, any person who's proud, is an abomination to Hashem. We find by avodah zarah is also called te'eva, an abomination. Don't bring the te'eva into your house. So you see that there's a connection between them. That was Rabbi Yechanan said in the name of Rabbi Shimon Yechoi. Rabbi Yochanan on his own says a different point. It's worse than that. Worse than worshipping Avodah Zarah, where at least a person worships Avodah Zarah. He might be like the people of Eliyahu's time, where they were Peseach al Shtei Asipim. He might be like the Goyim Dekorulei Lekod Alakaya, that they think of Hashem as the highest God, Romach Goyim Hashem, and they just think that there are lower ones below him, etc. But now Rabbi Yochanan himself saying it's even worse, as if he's Koyfer Be'ikar, as if he's denying Hashem altogether. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, v'rom levavecha v'shachachta es Hashem alekecha. Your heart will become proud and you'll forget Hashem. So we see that being proud is connected with forgetting Hashem. Rav Chama Rav Chanina Omer kilo ba kol arayis kulam. Rav Chama Rav Chanina says also a gas ruach is as if he had relations with all the various types of arayis. There's also the word te'eva. Tzivachos te'evas Hashem kol gvalev, uchtivasim kies kola te'eva sa'el, osu anshe oretz, the people of Eretz Yisrael, the Canaanim, the various nations of Canaan, did all of these abominable, disgusting things. And it's talking about all the Arayas, so we see that there's a connection. Eitz Yosef points out an interesting reason for the connection. The whole concept of Arayas we find in Sifrei Kabbalah. The Tzemach Tzedek explains some of them. The Tzemach Tzedek analyzes some of them in detail in Derech Mitzvasecha. Some others are discussed in other places about that all the Arayas down here are very, very horrible things that are chayiv kodesh, but lamaila, they represent tremendous yichudim. They represent various connections of spheres that are actually very, very great, exalted things. They just can't come down here on earth and be something and be something like that, because they're misused. So now, if a person is a gas ruach, meaning that he thinks of himself, that he deserves to have the covered and the glory and everything that Hashem has, then therefore, so he's going to think the same way about Arayas, that the same way I have the right to take the Arayas that are also in our world, and use them in our world the way that they're used in the Olam HaSel Yonim. We find that Shab Sitzvi did just that. He famously was matir many Arayas on such grounds, claiming that they needed to do Averis in order to bring the Gula. Yaakov Frank is his later successor, the one that the Baal Shem Tov fought against, did the same kind of thing. So yeah.
Ula Oma, Ula says another point. Gasru Akila Bana Bama. It's as if he built a Bama. Now, the Bama could be used for bringing Korbanos to Hashem, but it's still also, it's still Chayiv Karis, or it could be used for Avodah Zarah. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Chidlu Lachem in Ha'odim Hashem Neshama Ba'apoy, stay away, hold yourself back from a person whose Neshama is in his nose, Kibamen Nechshavu, because for what is he counted? Don't read Bameh, what? But Bama. So therefore, so we see, in other words, that here this person who's like a Bama, Ma'ashar explains, a Bama is a high up place. And in fact, we learned in Nedarim not so long ago in Ein Yaakov, we learned that you had the whole thing with Nachlio Bama, that a person gets the heritage of the Torah, Nichal Kale, but he ends up with Bama, he ends up with Gaiva, and then with Bama's Hagai. So here it's the same kind of thing. It's compared to a Bama, which is again a very prideful kind of a Zara. The reason why we compare it with the Neshama Ba'apo is because a person was created with a Ruach Tara, and here instead he takes and replaces that with the Ruach Tumah of the Bama, and therefore that's where we use the expression Neshama Ba'apo. In a different context, we have elsewhere, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that you're not supposed to go greet somebody before Shachris, because at that point, you're making him into a Bama instead of the Eibishter. There's my Maimorim that talk about the idea that at that point, before Shachris, a person has Neshama Ba'apa, his Neshama is not completely incorporated into his goof yet, it's still sort of hovering outside of him until he davens, so there's all of that point as well. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogova, Yudches Nissen. Eliyahu Novi, refined his body so much that when he left the world, then he went with his body up in a storm wind to Shemayim. And ever since then, we have the schus to have Eliyahu as our guest by the Seder, and also by Bris Mila, Eliyahu is present. Now, in those cases, he doesn't appear with his body, just in his spirit. And then Eliyahu is going to come and tell us the Besura Sagole. He's going to tell us that the Mashiach is coming as well. As we had in that Torah of Shabbos HaGadol, Hinei Anochi Shaleach Lachem, Eis Eliyahu Novi, Lifnei Bo Yem Hashem HaGadol Anoda. Then Eliyahu is going to come with his guf, because his guf is still there, Ado Yem Hazeh, in Olam HaYitzir. So now he'll come down with that guf into our world and announce Mashiach. What? The Rebbe says in his Sofer, in Chelech Beis, and look what the Sikh is, that he's in Olam HaYitzir, yeah. There is, by the way, in Halacha, this kind of thing comes up. I think the Chassam Sofer discusses the point. Sometimes we find that Eliyahu would come and teach Halachas to Chachamim in the Gemara, and sometimes we can even paskin like him, and then on the other hand, usually we say Torah, Lo v'shamayim, and one distinction is whether he's coming in his guf or whether he's coming only with his ruach. As far as yesterday, we were talking about the dinim of Atachon Antanu, so I misstated what he says, what the Alter Rebbe says on the subject of Shemayat Tefillah, what it is actually, the Alter Rebbe does mention the concept that according to some Rishonim, in particular according to the Rambam, if you forgot Atachon Antanu, you can say it in Shemayat Tefillah. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that there are other Rishonim, such as Tosfos, who disagree with that concept, because they say, what does it have to do? Shemayat Tefillah is for Bakoshas Tzrachav. You don't know, so fine, the same Talamoto, let's say, might belong in there, or the same or whatever, or Anenu, or whatever. How does Atachon Antonim, which is not Bakoshas Tzrachav, how would that belong in there? So therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, the only time you should use that expedient is if you forgot Atachon Antonim, and you're not going to have, you're not going to have wine for Abdullah tonight or tomorrow, then in that case, you can use that expedient of saying it in Shema Kaleinu. But otherwise, finish out Shemana Esrei, say Baruch HaMavdil, or if you've forgotten before Baruch HaMavdil, you did Malacha, then you would have to daven again and say Atachon Antonim in its proper place.